Inspiring solutions to save America, one show at a time. Are you ready to get on board?
They believe that they can destroy this bond that exists between you and Trump if they somehow make Trump look bad, make Trump look like a reprobate, embarrass you about Trump. They can't do it because you came before Trump. Desperately want Trump gone, and I know that they desperately want it codified that Trump cannot run again, because make no mistake, they remain scared to death of you, and they remain scared to death of Trump. Trump, 75 million, 80 million votes. And I'm going to tell you, you're not going anywhere. Even if Trump does, you're not. Which I think remains one of our big campaign strengths going forward. They can't separate you from Trump. And more importantly, they can't separate you from the ideas. They can't separate you from MAGA. They can't separate you from Make America Great Again.
From sea to shining sea, 3 hours of bold truth and excellence. The Wendy Bell Radio Program.
Hour number two of the Wendy Bell Radio Program is on the clock. We invite you to get our podcast, Wendy Bell Radio, 2 million downloads strong and growing. And you can join the live video stream. You can go to Wendy Bell Radio Network at the app and join the chat. Just glad you're here. As much as I don't like to do it, it is important that we pay attention to people who lie to us. It's important that we listen to what they say. It's important that we go up to 30,000 feet and we pay attention to the landscape below us to see how all of this is lining up. And threats to our democracy, that's the theme today. The left wants you to believe it's Donald Trump. The left wants you to believe it's racism. It's some form of discrimination. There's somebody who's being wronged somewhere. That's a threat. People who are what? White rural Christians. Big threat to democracy. It's stupid. And in many ways, I don't like to waste my time talking about it, but we have to. Because this is what the media now have stooped to do. At the beginning of the show, I told you how I believe there is a true palpable savior complex among a lot of these people on the left. I think some of them truly do believe that they are doing something for the greater good, that they have been called to swoop in and to help us, that they know better. And if we would just trust them, then they could save the day. The problem is their policies suck. They suck. The way they go about it sucks. And so everything sucks that's connected to it. I mean, look at where we are vis-a-vis 3 years ago. There's really no debating that. But when it's a cable news platform and the cable news platform decides to break away from the GOP candidate for president, don't tell me it is anything other than propaganda. It's purposeful, it's propaganda, and it's gross. And in this instance, it's Rachel Maddow. So we're going to start with a series of audio sound bites for you here. I want you to be able to listen to these white college-educated liberals. Then they have Joy Reid as well. And she's Harvard-educated, right? I want you to hear their reasoning for not wanting to hear anything Donald Trump says. The role of the media is not to tell you what is or is not news. It is to provide you the information so that you can decide what is newsworthy and what is not. So that you can decide how you're going to live your life, the decisions that you make, how you guide your family. The media, the saviors, believe it is incumbent upon them to push upon you a narrative of suck. And Americans aren't buying it anymore. And they know that. I got four audio sound bites for you here, if I'm not mistaken. Five? I heard that through the glass. And that's going to start with, this is Super Tuesday, this is Donald Trump out of the gates. He is at his victory party at Mar-a-Lago. He is talking about their, you know, the issues going on in America. And he's said this many times, that we are a country that is dying. We are a country in decline. We are no longer respected on the world stage. That Joe Biden and his administration have done such disastrous damage to who we fundamentally are and how other countries view us. That's a lie, according to Rachel Maddow. So they're going to break away from the coverage, and I want you to hear why she explains that move. Go.
I read an article yesterday where it said this is one of the finest run campaigns that anybody has ever seen. That's pretty good, right? That's pretty good. It's really a statement. And we have no choice.
Yeah, okay. You know, it is okay. I will say that it is a decision that we revisit constantly in terms of the balance between allowing somebody to knowingly lie on your air about things they've lied about before and you can predict they're going to lie about. And so therefore it is just, it's irresponsible to allow them to do that.
Listen to the savior. I am the keeper of the facts. I know what is right and what is wrong. I am not going to allow someone else to be heard. That's pathological. That's psychological. That's narcissism 101. That's creepy. Who the hell are you, Rachel Maddow? Who the hell are you? Besides the one who told us that if we got the jab, we wouldn't get COVID. That didn't turn out so hot, did it? We are not going to allow him to spew his lies. What did he just say? Hey, we've been told that we've got the best run campaign. Can't hear that. There is an emotional fragility that bonds these triggered leftists together in this cult mentality. And the mission, regardless of the mission, right? There has to be an enemy, whether it's racism or you're anti-LGBT. There's always a label affixed to it, right? Donald Trump is the grand poobah of all of this. She can't stand it. It would be irresponsible, she says. Audio soundbite number two.
It's a balance between knowing that that's irresponsible to broadcast and also knowing that as the de facto, soon to be de facto nominee of the Republican Party, this is not only the man who is likely to be the Republican candidate for president, but this is the way he's running.
They don't need 87,000 IRS agents. They need 87,000 therapists, because if what we're seeing and the vibes we're feeling and the tea leaves we're reading all come together, Donald Trump's going to win in November. And they're going to lose their everlasting minds, right? She almost like vomits in her mouth when she calls him the presumptive candidate. You know, Rachel, we expect you to behave as a grown-up. And giggling and being petulant and petty about all of this stuff, it is so unbecoming. It is perfectly in keeping with who you are, and we expect it, but it's gross. And it's a bad look. Only to be picked up now by, let's see, this Stephanie Ruhle. She's one of the panelists. And so she's going to hop in here and say, well, you know what? Why don't we just fact check him in real time? This is what they do. They allow Donald Trump to be heard in some capacity. And then they, the keepers of the archives, the masters of reality, the deciders of what is real and what is fake, they get to come together and they get to wave the wand and decide. That's called mental illness. Go.
Well, here's how we'll balance it. Yeah. Why don't we fact check the hell out of him?
Yes, and we do that after the fact, and that is the best remedy that we've got. It does not fix the fact that we broadcast it.
But it's
honestly
stunning that he's saying these things, yeah, and people are hearing it. Let's just go through it, right? That we have the most devastating economy. Are you kidding me? We have had the best economic recovery of any country in the developed world. He's telling an audience right there, oh my goodness, that the paltry oil production, we're producing more oil today than we ever have in the history of our country.
Hey, Stephanie, I'm going to fact check you in just a minute here. See, we export a hell of a lot of our oil that we could be using, and then we pay through the nose from other countries to bring it back to us. Now, I'm no logistics expert, but I'm just going to be like, what the hell is that? And maybe you can tell me why the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, Stephanie, is near historic lows, because Joe Biden drained the damn thing. Does that make sense to you, Stephanie? Because economically speaking, particularly when we've got three freaking wars going on around the world that our government, our CIA is actively involved in, right? What? We need our strategic reserves. And she's not done yet. Listen to this.
Think about the American Rescue Plan, the infrastructure plan. We have created more jobs, 3.2 million more jobs than we had pre-pandemic. The problem that we do have is inflation. And so what Donald Trump does is prey upon the fact that people don't necessarily feel good and life's expensive. Mm. But when it comes to facts, here's something that's absolutely nonsensical and infuriating. When people's wages go up, they credit themselves. They say, I'm good at my job, I just got a raise. But when everything costs more, they blame the government.
You guys driven by a strip mall lately? Have you gone by a mall lately? You gone into the mall lately? Why is everybody shutting down? Why are businesses closing? Raising wages is making money out of thin air. It's got to come from somewhere, Stephanie. And I didn't even take macroeconomics. This is their argument. This guy's created all of these jobs, don't you know? Really? We were locked down. Okay, when we come back, we're not done with this. But we also have to dance over to this other area, because it's becoming painfully clear that Joe Biden is losing touch with any kind of path to victory. Ah, oh, Wolf Blitzer. Oh, such a bummer. Enjoy it next on the Wendy Bell Radio Program. So what are the threats to democracy, ladies and gentlemen? It is a federal government that does not know how to stop its drunken spending, that is not listening to the people say, we cannot continue to live this way. We would be bankrupt. Our cars would be repoed. Our homes would be taken from us. We would be on the streets if we lived in our private lives the way our federal government lives in their lives with our money. It's like having Apple Pay, right? Now that everything's cashless, it's a terrible time to be a parent of young kids. Because usually you could say, all right, here's $5. You can get something up to that, or $10, whatever it is. After that, there's no more. Now, since there's no money exchanging hands, right? It's like, whatever. It's how people get in such woeful credit card debt when they go away to college. They don't see it. It's not transactional. It's easy. It's painless. The real threats: a drunken spending government and a media that every day goes out there and in its savior complex, or in just sheer corruption, narcissism, weakness, whatever it is, ego stroking, feel that they need to be the ones to tell you their reality. The way they see it is the way you should see it. And on this panel, where Rachel Maddow has bounced off of Donald Trump on Super Tuesday, saying this was a great victory, we've run a great campaign, blah, blah, blah. We can't cover this, right? Here comes Joy Reid. She's going to hop in and she's going to try to wax poetic on Joe Biden's behalf regarding job creation and all of this economic stuff that is demonstrably false because it was all because of COVID. Listen.
Literally Googling, and I just pulled up these four numbers. This is the gross domestic product in the country. In 2019, it was plus 2.3%. In 2020, it was -2.8%. That is the election year. That is the reason Donald Trump didn't get reelected. That was part of it.
But that,
2021, it was 5.9. And I was just going to say that. I was just going to say that. And 1.9 in 2022. Those four numbers. 2.3, -2.8, 5.9, and 1.9. There's one factor in all four of those, and Lawrence just said it. Donald Trump had one job. He had one crisis. He's saying, oh, all of these things were perfect. You had one crisis, bruh. It was called the pandemic.
So distasteful. So childish, so predictable, such a threat to common sense. That is who that woman is. That is what that network is all about. Now, to be equal and then to be fair, we need to bounce over to CNN where Wolf Blitzer, who we understand could be on the chopping block. I know, what would we do without Wolf and his stare? Wolf Blitzer has, I guess, this guy, Mitch Landrieu. He is the Biden campaign head. Can you imagine having that job? There's not enough money in the world for that job. You're like, this is what Wolf Blitzer is talking about. My goodness, Joe Biden is losing some key base support. What's going on, Mitch? Listen to this.
The New York Times Siena poll last weekend showed key parts of President Biden's 2020 coalition seemingly falling apart. He's losing support with young voters, women, black voters, and losing some of that support to Donald Trump. Why do you think Trump has gained support among some of these key voting blocs?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure that, that's accurate, but assuming that some of those things are occurring, it's not really a big surprise. You, as you know, because you're an expert in political science, there are tectonic shifts going on amongst the electorate.
That's code for, oh, crap, they're onto our suck. Oh, no. What's going to happen? There's pushback in these legal battles. All these indictments. Fannie looks like she's about to have it handed to her. Oh, no, Jack Smith. He looks like a deranged lunatic. Alvin Bragg is just a... And Letitia James is toxic. And everybody knows it. The number that they're talking about there, the non-college educated, non-white voter, right? Particularly black, Hispanic, working class. They used to go for Biden plus 46, I think it said, in 2020. Now it's just plus 6. Oh, snap. They're gonna try to tell you, nah, I don't, you know, it's early. I don't really believe these polls, but they're freaking out, as well they should. Because you can only lie to people for so long. Your track record, your federal deficit, the madness in this country, the temperature of the activism, all of these planets moving around, now colliding, and they think that you don't see it. And then you've got MSNBC thinking that they need to protect you. We're not going to allow you to hear these words. We have to protect you. This isn't looking good. And how do we know it's not looking good? Well, we have an expert on tap coming up next. His name is Rich Barris. He is a pollster. He is called the People's Pundit. He is all over these elections, all over Super Tuesday. And now he's looking in his crystal ball towards November. What does an expert see? And a real expert. Coming up next on the Wendy Bell Radio Program. Welcome back to the Wendy Bell Radio Program. You know, numbers, polling, you can be on the fence about what they tell you, if you can extrapolate facts from them, if they're really just trends. What can we do with data? Well, you got to have a guy who's the king of data, who loves looking at trends, who loves providing to the American people snapshots of current public opinion. And his name is Rich Barris, and he is the People's Pundit. And he is awesome. Rich, welcome back.
Hey, Wendy, thanks for having me back. It's always good to be here.
I love watching you on Sean Parnell's show. Brock was just talking about how he watches you multiple times a week. As you talk about the data that you crunch, and you do this in a way that's entertaining, and it's educational. What did you see from Super Tuesday that surprised perhaps even you? Or was it completely predictable that Trump was going to slaughter everybody else?
I'll tell you, I mean, it's kind of like watching the Supreme Court justices. You listen to what they're saying, just like polls. You can, you know, look and glean what people are telling you, but you never really know until they go to the ballot box. And the first thing that surprised me, and then after that, I guess nothing else did, was how well, when we got those initial returns in Virginia, the former president was doing. So Nikki Haley really was going to continue to be a pain. She was never going to beat him, but if she was going to continue to be a pain, you would have saw that in Loudoun County, Virginia, right? You would have saw that in Richmond City, and that just didn't happen. I mean, the initial early vote that came in Loudoun County, he beat her in. So very educated, very well-to-do, very, you know, bougie people over there, and yet Trump still beat her there. So that was the first thing that surprised me, and then after seeing that, I thought this is going to be a really bad night for Nikki Haley. So that's it.
Absolutely right. So as we go forward, and we've got several months of this to go, how do you do this? What's your strategy? How do you go about figuring out the places you want to target and dig into? How does that work?
Well, that's a great question. We have prior elections where we know we're bellwethers, but here's the little secret, and a lot of election forecasters get this wrong. Bellwethers change all the time, a lot, by state as well. I remember Florida being the key battleground state. You could not win without the Sunshine State. And for years, guys like me would just be focused like a laser on Hillsborough County. But demographics change, Wendy. Demographics change. So the truth is, we start doing this about a year out, and we start looking at how other counties and overall states, of course, have been changing since the last election demographically, and we survey the heck out of them. And then while we look at this primary vote that's coming in, of course, that certainly helps to tell us whether or not, those either assumptions or even basically hypotheses at that point, you know, pan out. But there are usually the go-to ones that we have. But even they, over time, will change. So you have to really recognize that change. That's the most important thing.
Now, when you're talking about change, I know that in Pennsylvania, there's been a tremendous movement, a voter registration change away from Democrats towards the GOP, which is intriguing in this state, which I call the land before time because it's so freaking backwards. Is that one of those trends that you would be paying attention to? Are you seeing an outright repudiation of some policies vis-a-vis others?
You know, that's a great example. Voter registration is one of those trends that we look at because it's static, as opposed to when a pollster like me calls a voter and asks them what their party is. Maybe they didn't go down to the secretary of, the clerk's office or the secretary of election, whatever it is in their own state. Maybe they didn't go down there yet and change their registration. But, let's go back in time. It's 2016. We called a lot of Democrats and they said, I'm independent, or even maybe I'm Republican because they really like Trump. And they were those ancestral working Democrats in Western Pennsylvania. When they go out and make that change, that's when they have basically concluded that this change is permanent. I'm not really a swing voter anymore. I have changed, basically allegiances. And that's going to have a much higher predictive value on their voting behavior than just when you call them once every couple of months and they may change their mind here and there. So that's a big deal. Pennsylvania's seen a lot of this. So has North Carolina. And honestly, several of what I see in those states kind of reminds me of what I saw in Florida back in 08 and 09. There was this move. There were people that were registered as Democrat for a while, but they would vote Republican at the presidential level. You have to learn that, where is that happening? And then is there a group of people that's separate from them that we really need to look at? And if they're driving that change, then it's more significant than normal. And so, that's a perfect example. And those are some really good states that we use to gauge it.
Donald Trump says he feels as though California and even New York and New Jersey could be in play. I mean, I'm watching Steve Garvey, who has now secured a position to go ahead in the general to go up against Adam Schiff to fill Dianne Feinstein's seat. I mean, do you believe that traditional strongholds of Democrat power have the ability to possibly sway the other way?
I'm much more bullish on New York than I am California, but here's a little tidbit a lot of people don't know. California was only one of about a half a dozen states that moved more to Trump from 16 to then in 20 than from 16. So California was a little bit more Trumpy than it was the 4 years before. So what's driving that? the Central Valley is getting a lot more Trumpy when it comes to especially Hispanic voters. Orange County and San Diego used to be Republican strongholds. They're whiter and more educated and more wealthy. So this realignment is, you know, getting chipped away a little bit there. Than, you know, it's not 10 years ago anymore, is my point. But New York, I'm actually fairly bullish on, and a couple of reasons for that. Post-COVID, we saw a lot of state-to-state migration, and Nevada is one of the states that let Republicans down, neighboring California, obviously. It has let Republicans down year after year after year, but the demographics have changed considerably after COVID. And on top of that, Trump is just doing so much better with Hispanic voters. He's going to have an effect down ballot. So when you look at somebody like Garvey, it has to be, in order to win a state like California, it would have to be a politician that people aren't really looking at, traditional Republicans or Democrats. Has to be somebody who transcends that. And he's always been very well-liked, so we'll see what happens there. But right. I do think, Wendy, New York is closer than people think. I do. And I'm basing that based on my own polling, what we have seen in the past, you know, with actual voting. And then, of course, you know, everyone thought maybe Lee Zeldin was a one-off. But I don't think that he is. Maybe it won't be that close. Maybe it will. But I really think that you know, you look at polls, even forget about me. Look at polls like Siena. They are traditionally understating Republican shares of the vote, and it's close even in their polling. So I think you're just burying your head in the sand, you know, if you're not looking at some states like New York and saying that this could be closer this time around. Now, do you want to go and spend money there? You know, that's decision for the campaign to make, but I am somebody who believes you need to go after everyone everywhere. And if Trump, for instance, is going to do like an urban swing around the country, you cannot leave out the five boroughs. And by the way, that's where that swing is really coming from. I mean, you got 14% or 12% in Kings County. The Siena College polling routinely this time in this year, this cycle, has him in the 20s. That's a huge number because there are so many voters there. When you see a 10, 14-point shift in a place like the five boroughs, it's that's an enormous amount of votes.
You know, and they want to downplay the cause or the effect that money, that finance, that we all feel, no matter how wealthy or how poor you are, you can't say that you're better, yep. You know, that you feel less stress. It's stressful. Talk about the black, not college educated, common sense thing going on out there. I mean, Joe Biden has lost like 30% of that core support in the last 3 years. That's cataclysmic.
And it's not just that many of them decide, you know, are planning to stay home. A lot of them have changed, you know, have changed their voting preference. I saw this, Wendy, on Tuesday. I have my area. It is a very Republican area, very Trumpy area, but it's got a large block of black voters, about 30%, and it's kind of like Georgia in a county. And I watched it when I was down there, you know, observing. I saw them pulling independent ballots, which you can do in a primary. You just have to, you know, you're an independent, but you'll pull a Republican ballot or you'll pull a Democratic ballot. And you can tell easily which ballot they pulled because the tables are different. So you'll grab that form, you'll walk over to the Republican table or the Democratic table. I watched with my own eyes a ton of black voters pulling independent ballots. I could easily see glaring over what bubble was filled in the Scantron. These people were voting for Trump in droves, and that obviously happened. You could see the results in North Carolina from Tuesday. He won every single county. And when you look at counties like Craven, Carteret, even areas around Mecklenburg, there's just no way you could win that much of the vote without bringing over other people. I mean, can it be done? Sure, but it's not normal. We don't see that. So there's in certain counties, there are still majority registered Democrats, and yet Trump won so many more votes. So there's only one way that can happen. That's if traditional Democratic coalition groups that are independent, really, are still pulling a Republican ballot. So we see it. We know it's real. And every poll out there is showing that, right? So 6 months ago, 8 months ago, I may have been, you know, one of the few people talking about it, but now everybody is talking about it. It's real. It's real. Because I know there's a lot of concern about whether or not it is. It is. We're not talking about one poll here overstating Republican support among minorities. This is every poll everywhere. It's happening.
Yes. Tell me I'm right or wrong when I say this. I believe that black high school or whatever graduated, educated men have the ability to X out the effect of the white college educated liberal woman.
Oh, absolutely. You are correct. This is the biggest misnomer, which drives me nuts, that all we do is obsess about the liberal, white, educated, suburban woman. Wendy, women are about half of the electorate, all right? If educated women aren't even half of that part of the electorate. And then the suburbs are half of the electorate. So you're just continuously cutting this group in half. By the time you do, you get to about 13%. For every point of white vote that Republicans lose, let's say they lose a point among whites, they have to win 6% of the black vote in order to make up for that. Donald Trump is currently polling at 22% in the New York Times poll among black voters. He was at 4% in their final 2020 poll. So just that alone tells you that even if he did lose a point, 2 points, he would still make it up. However, he's not losing that. It's just greatly over. We're just like hyper focused on this one demographic group and pretending that these other groups can't outweigh the impact of those voters. They absolutely can. And by the way, that says nothing about the shift we've seen among Hispanics. What does that do to the equation?
Okay, now that's a good teaser beezer. You have to hang tight. Rich, Barris, I want you to hang with me here. The People's Pundit for a reason. Let's talk about Hispanics. Let's talk about the electoral map for 2024. Let's look into his crystal ball together next on the Wendy Bell Radio Program. He's called the People's Pundit. His name is Rich Barris, and he does numbers crunching, polling, and he's really enjoyable to talk to. Rich, while I appreciate your time so much, I've got to dig into this Hispanic trend that you're seeing, because one could argue in the world of common sense that the open borders and all of this stuff, perhaps they all want new voters to come in, and if we give you freebies and we give you gift cards and we pay for everything for you, you're going to vote Democrat. Historically speaking, though, same as the black community, these people are inherently conservative.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, we used to talk a lot about the social aspects of that. What do they agree on, you know, with Republican social policy? And that maybe they're a little bit more liberal when it comes to economic policy. But in truth, because, you know, the dichotomy has shifted, the political spectrum has shifted, and I would have to say this, economic populists on the left really have fallen away post-Bernie. There's nowhere for them to go. So those voters specifically felt a bit orphaned. The Democratic Party is certainly not for them. And with the rise of Trumpism on the right, it gave them a newer home. It just, you know, we saw, you know, alignments happen like this. You'll chip away at it a little bit at a time, and then all of a sudden, boom, it'll happen. And that's what it's looking like right now with Hispanic voters. And it's almost like Reagan had said it, you know, we're their natural home. But over time, I think, Wendy, honestly, they just kept replacing people who went through that political maturation, leaving that border open. They just kept replacing them faster than Republicans could convert them. And now we're at a point where, you know, especially post the Great Recession, we're at a point where Republicans may have caught up. It may be the greatest political irony ever that Democrats let in people hoping to have a permanent underclass who inevitably turn on them. And then, you know, or at least their second generations to third generations turn on them and then do them in electorally.
Right on. And talk about Generation Z. Of my five sons, three of them, 18 to 24, fit into this category. And their numbers show, particularly young men, that they're leaning towards the right. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I mean, I went to go pick up my son the other day, and they have these mock elections at school. And you're talking about, I mean, there's a lot of minorities in the school. You're talking about black men. We're talking about Hispanics and young people. Trump won every single vote at his table, every single one. And, you know, years ago, it was, you know, they play these games all the time with kids in school. And years ago, it just wasn't like that. So there were always, you know, some people that some kids who said, you know, I like Trump better. But I'll tell you, the younger generation, they see these memes. You know, I mean, people kind of joke at the power of memes, but I sometimes will run little experiments. I wonder how long it'll take before my teenage son sees that meme. And then a couple of days later, it'll come to me. Hey, Dad, did you see this? This is hilarious. And it'll be mocking by.
Right.
they see it, Wendy. They do.
Well, and it's the overt, like, Trump Latinos, and you've got now rappers coming out of the woodwork for Trump. It makes a difference, for sure. I want you to look into your crystal ball, and I know you don't, you're not in the business necessarily of predicting, but I want to ask you one thing that you didn't see coming that has come true, and one thing that you are feeling might. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I would say this. I'm not sure, and I don't mean this in any way. It's just that we poll so often, so frequent, that I think I did see a lot of this coming. I think Trump maybe will do better with the educated voter than some people think. I really do. I think that he's had a habit, especially with white educated voters, he's had a habit of really polling worse than he performs. He doesn't win them, but this time around, he's polling at about the levels where he would overperform, right? So that's interesting enough. And then also, looking at Michigan, there is now evidence from South Carolina to Michigan, North Carolina now, which was Tuesday. There is definitely evidence of non-white voting in the Republican primary. And it's sad that a lot of these exit pollsters, they'll put an NA next to that demographic group because the sample size is so small they don't want to show you. But what you'll notice is in most Republican primaries, you'll see 2%, 3%. If you go back and look at 2016, that's what you'll see. If you go back and look at 12 and 8, that's what you'll see. Here, South Carolina was 11. You know, this is growing. And it may not be statistically significant to the pollster to put it up on the, you know, for the exit polling, but that is a lot more than what we normally see participate in these primaries. That was, even if he did better in a general election, it wasn't necessarily true that they would come out for a primary, Wendy. That's very different.
Right.
So the fact that they did and are is, it tells me that, or it reinforces what we're seeing with the trends for the general election. It reinforces that this is absolutely real and this is going to happen.
Let's say you are a newspaper editor and you've got to come up with the title for the election of 2024. And this is the title that's going to go out. This is the headline that's going to be sprayed all over the place. What is it going to say, Rich Barris?
Wow. I like my Star Wars analogies, right? You had the New Hope, then you had the Empire. You had the New Hope, which I would think, you know, is appropriate to label for 16. You had the Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, right.
Right? So now in 2024, you know, will this be the last Jedi? I think this probably is the more appropriate way. I think, you know, Trump probably put it better than me. You know, the revenge, success will be our revenge.
Yes.
That's what I really think.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. I've got 45 seconds and I'm going to ask you this. Based on your data and your experience, who should Donald Trump choose as his number two?
Ooh, that's a tough one. It is, because it's different this year. He doesn't need a Mike Pence to, you know, qualm the typical Republican voter. You know, he doesn't need that. He doesn't really need anybody. I think what he needs is someone who will help him survive what's waiting for him when he gets inaugurated again. I think he needs a bomb thrower. It needs to be somebody that the establishment and the state views, if not worse than him, then very much, you know, not an improvement. Because if he picks somebody that is an adequate replacement to them, then he's going to have a problem.
I get
so you. I would take electoral considerations totally out of this, Wendy. I really would. And I would think about survival.
In my last few seconds, tell everybody how they can follow you.
peoplespundit.locals.com. We're all over social, but that's the best place, folks.
Hey, you are wonderful. I so enjoy you, Rich Barris. Thank you for your time, sir. Hey, he brought up Michigan. Well, I got Michigan in the crosshairs, because did you know that in Michigan, there is a very real threat to our democracy going on? Hour number 3 of the Wendy Bell Radio program. I'll explain next.